Peek at That Markets Time on Resonance 104.4. Stacey.
I do want to warn people out there that there's going to be a 4 or 5 week break from Resonance 104.4 FM. The station will go on summer holiday, and therefore it will be pre-programmed sort of stuff from August, I think it's 9th or 10th, somewhere around there, to September 15th. So, just so you can prepare yourself and really, you know, spend your time, you know, just appreciating this episode of The Truth About Markets and the next two or three coming up.
Oh, boy, yeah. It's happening.
Well, I just saw an interesting story. I had seen the headline a few days ago, and I thought it just seemed part of the abusive, inevitable, you know, surveillance state in America. And that was that some guy had groped a woman at a few women at San Francisco Airport, International Airport, by posing as a TSA agent and having them come into those private booths and started patting them down and feeling their breasts and other body parts. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out the guy is a partner in a private equity firm in Singapore. But before that, he was a managing director of Barclays and a managing director of Deutsche Bank. Max Kaiser, you did warn the people about these sort of bankster people.
Yeah, well, true enough. The the psychology of being success in that industry is the same psychology of sexual predators, pedophiles, hardened criminals, and it doesn't makes perfect sense. I mean, this is how the industry thrives. Is that kind of mentality, a predatory mentality?
Well, I think it's, plus they get away with crime after crime. And I have a relative who's in law enforcement, and he had argued two or three years ago that the bankers have paid enough fines. We shouldn't do anything to them. And I said, you watch, it'll turn to murder and other crimes, because once you let them get away with all these other crimes, it's going to be naturally go to that. And he shouted at me saying, that's the most absurd thing to say. Now look at all these JP Morgan bankers who kill their wives and then themselves. Look at these Deutsche Bank and Barclays bankers who are groping women at airports. This is what I said would happen inevitably, because I said to him, if it works for a kid in the ghetto, it's the same theory that you apply to them, that, you know, that it's going to transacting in marijuana is going to lead to crack cocaine.
Banking is a gateway drug.
Yeah.
Right. So, there's no deterrent for these crimes. And when you take socially maladjusted people and you give them unlimited amounts of money and no framework, no regulatory framework, no deterrent for committing crimes, it makes sense that it's going to spill over into other criminal activity. And I don't know why the law enforcement person you refer to there and your family would have such a hard time accepting this. I think it has to do with people are bred to respect. I mean, the cops are trained to respect authority, so bankers have a faux authority attached to them. We are told that they are the living embodiment of God, and we need to pray at their feet. So, yeah, a cop is going to be dumb enough to buy that. Sure.
Now, of course, the biggest news this week, which will have tremendous economic impact, ultimately, is this story of the downing of Malaysian airline Flight 17 over Ukraine. It's no longer called the Ukraine. But it's really kind of difficult to talk about, because it's all just wild speculation and shrieking at this point. The one thing we all know for certain is it crashed, because there's plenty of footage of the location of the debris and the remnants of the plane and some many bodies and body parts. And so it's a horrible situation. I would say that an interesting look at it was Professor Stephen Cohen, who's a professor at NYU and Princeton, an expert in Russia, he speaks Russian. He's friends with Gorbachev, and he was friends with Anna Politskaya, the investigative journalist who was murdered. And his wife is Katrina van der Heuvel, the editor of The Nation. Now, he was saying that this is a common feature of the last Cold War, and that was downing of airplanes. Remember, you had the Cuban airliner, that was the first ever passenger plane downed, and that was with intention, with the U.S. The CIA backed this guy from, Cuba, who was a dissident, and he set a bomb on the plane. Then you had, a few from Russia. So the point is, he said that this new Cold War 2.0 started earlier this year, and already you're seeing these sort of accidents. So if we have another Cold War, it could be a return back to the pre-globalization days that we saw from, the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
I thought that guy Stephen Kahn was pretty interesting. He points out, he made the comparison to what's happening in Gaza, to what's happening in Ukraine, because you have, remember the coup in Ukraine, U.S.-backed coup not too long ago, and the new leadership started bombing people in eastern Ukraine, similar to the way people in Gaza are being bombed by Israel. And as a result, those people in eastern Ukraine, they are quite fearful of planes flying overhead. They shot, depending on what stories you have there, one or two. One was a military, one was a cargo plane. Then you have this flight coming in, was off course, basically. And these folks that are trying to protect themselves against Kiev, it looks like they mistakenly shot down this plane. So, ultimately the responsibility, the finger should be pointed at NATO and Victoria Nuland. This looks like yet another mess, another fine mess the U.S. has gotten everybody into.
Yeah, well, that was the thing I didn't even know about, that, and we really keep a track on our eye on all the news. And he mentioned that basically the Kiev government has started, a lot of heavy aerial bombardment about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I hadn't seen any news on that at all. And no, I didn't know that. And he said it's been just like Gaza, that it's been that heavy bombardment. There have been reports that were reported in the mainstream media that there were these two military planes shot down. And I remember the one that 49 military personnel had died. What they failed to mention was that they were bombing the area. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know that, none of the articles pointed that out. So again, this is just, even in the day of social media and all sorts of information available, I wasn't able to see that. I didn't know that information until I heard Stephen Cohen talking about it. He knows people in the region, so he had known about this.
Yeah, so in that context, you start to see what's going on here. And I guess he's also saying this is the beginning of a Cold War, another on a war. So this is certainly interesting. You got a lot of conflicts around the world apparently, so things are heating up.
Well, and remember, go back and look at one of our recent interviews with Liam Halligan, one of the last two, he quantifies what the trade is between Russia and Europe, because it'll be Europe that gets hit the most with increasing sanctions. They do a huge amount of trade with Europe, with Russia, and Russia's some of the, they import stuff. They're one of the biggest importers, if not the biggest, for European market. So, there's a huge impact that could happen for some very vulnerable nations that are already teetering on debt collapse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the trade implications are pretty strong. But in the meantime, another story that wasn't covered is that Russia, China, Brazil, Iran, they started up this $100 billion bank that's going to compete with World Bank and IMF and these other big international banks, because they want to get out of the dollar. They see the dollar as harmful, doing a lot of harm, which of course it does. So this will put a lot of pressure on the dollar. So that's another big thread of kind of underlying economic activity that is being basically ignored.
I'm not sure Iran's involved with it, but certainly India, China, Brazil, Russia, and South Africa are. Yes, that would be the new bank: Brazil, Russia, China, and South Africa, and India. And the India will be giving, I guess, $10 billion. China's something like $50 billion. Russia's like $27 billion. Brazil the same amount. And we don't know exactly what their model will be, but the good thing is, going back to Cold War days, it was at least there was another ideology then. And as Paul Craig Roberts always points out, it kept capitalism honest, that there was another ideology that people might turn to called communism or socialism. And so it kept capitalism honest and had to look good for the people to want to adhere to this ideology. So if you have another global development bank on the world, like a World Bank, at least the World Bank will be forced to compete. Right now, it doesn't have to compete. It just imposes. And therefore, it's caused all sorts of misery. If there's another bank that might offer better deals, then, you know, the World Bank will have to match those deals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, competition is good. So the U.S. has had a competition-free business environment for a while. And so now it looks like it's going to get more competitive. So it's good for folks, you know, who rely on competition. Speaking of competition, I noticed that inflation is starting to creep into the picture in a big way. You know, inflation for 20 years has been subdued. For one, you had the introduction of China through the World Trade Organization, which brought about the ability for companies to outsource their labor to China and reduce their labor costs by over 95%. So that was mitigating a factor on inflation for a while. Then you had government statistically trying to eliminate it by recalculating how they add up things, you know, and then now, though, however, the cost of essentials, the food, the energy, and these types of things are starting to break out. So it looks as though all that money printing that's been going on to bail out the banks, which people said, oh, look, it hasn't caused inflation. Well, because it's been hoarded on banks' balance sheets and hasn't entered the economy. It looks like that's starting to seep into the economy now. And so that becomes a self-reinforcing cycle. Higher prices drive higher prices. And so that'll be interesting. That'll be a genuine markdown in living standards when you have an environment where wages have been flat for so long, and now if prices start to go up real meaningful way, 10-15% a year, then that will have a big impact.
Well, it'll have a very big impact, much bigger than what you can tell from the headline news, because we've covered a story on the Kaiser Report today, which I think is very important for you here in the UK, which is that the government said this week that, you know, the new employment numbers came out, and they said employment has gone up. It's like 900,000 new jobs in this past year, and yet wages have declined when factoring in inflation. So wages went up somewhere between 0.3% and 0.7%. I've seen two different takes on it. But inflation is 1.6%, so obviously there was a decline in the wages. However, so they present this image, right, where they say employment went up by 900,000. Well, 404,000 of those are self-employed. So they use those self-employed people who register as self-employed, and they say, look, employment has gone up. What they don't do, so they count those numbers, but they don't count how much they earn, because that would be a horrible for those those wage numbers. So the fact is that, unlike prior to 2008, self-employed people tend to earn a lot less than employed people obviously they have no sort of benefits and insurance and you know, pension schemes being paid into. But the other thing is that the average income for the male is £17,000, and the average for women is £9,800. This is for self-employed people. So not only is there a huge wage gap, a much bigger gap in the earnings, men get £17,000, women £9,800, but those numbers are shocking. You know, the average wage would not have declined just like nearly 1%, but by like 10%. So income for self-employed is down 27%, for example.
Yeah, more statistical hijinks. And, you know, all these statistical adjustments are cosmetic. And it's like the portrait of Dorian Gray. Mm. You know, eventually, you know, while the government misreports these numbers, the real economy is up in the attic, deteriorating. You know, people are really experiencing, you know, a bad economy. And then they flip on the TV and they're told that things are great. So they think, it must be me. They can't be lying in this way. So but eventually it all catches up in the end. The portrait up in the attic is revealed, and then it's all quite shocking. So this is why they need scapegoats. So one thing about a Cold War is that when the situation, the wheels come off, they can point to somebody and say, oh, it's their fault because they are subhuman, or they, you know, whip out the old you know, scapegoat rhetoric, and it's easy to get the folks here all frothed up, you know, that read the Sun or read the Mail and get all lathered up, get on the 2 minutes of hate. And I guess we're in that part of the cycle.
The remarkable thing about this new Cold War, as Stephen Cohen says, was started a few months ago. Well, the preparations for it started prior to that. And you can see that in that series called The Americans. Now, Hollywood works very closely with U.S. intelligence agencies in terms of content and advice on you know, various stories and legitimacy of what a CIA agent would do and blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, The Americans is, you know, it's an interesting series if you ever lived during the 80s, if you remember the 80s. And yet it's preparing this Cold War mentality. You could see that it would be useful if they were planning a new Cold War the following year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is interesting. That series is remarkable. You know, the fact that, you know, part of the surveillance state is not only that the government and the agencies are spying on us, but they are impacting the culture in meaningful ways as part of the propaganda. And, you know, back in the 30s, during the propaganda of the Nazis, you know, compared to today, it's very, very crude. So people, when they don't see the obvious propaganda of the Nazi era around them as such, so they don't think they're being propagandized toward. Yeah. So they don't understand how they are being propagandized, and because it's very subtle. Just like back in the 30s, it was very subtle for the Germans at that time. They didn't really understand what was going on, and the people in the U.S. don't understand, and the U.K. are equally clueless about how they're being set up to go into this Cold War mentality. And it's more pervasive, of course. You know, the state, you know, this, even the Stasi looks quite crude compared to the tools. I was just reading that the Tor network, I keep reading stories about how this Tor network is highly compromised. You know, everyone believed it was a safe way to surf, but you keep reading stories about the fact that it was set up pretty much for government agencies to communicate in, you know, with some secrecy. And so it's a government tool. So, I mean, people are using it, and they apparently are not understanding of that whole aspect of it.
Well, interestingly, there were people telling me 5-6 years ago that I should use encrypted emails, and I reckoned that, that it would probably target me, that I would think that I would stand out in a sea of unencrypted emails, and therefore that they would seek and find more information. And it turns out that that's exactly what they've been doing. And so I just don't email anything that I would want to have held against me. Most people don't, as we see, with all the, even the Barclays stories and all the rigging and LIBOR rigging and Goldfix rigging. They were openly saying all their crimes they were doing in emails. I try not to do that, and only email stuff about food, what I'm going to have for dinner, that kind of stuff. Now, the other thing, you mentioned this, we were talking about this new Cold War and the new tools they have. Remember this story that emerged about Facebook doing studies on our emotional states and what stories scared us and what stories made us angry. Well, it turns out that that was funded and part of the U.S. Department of Defense, or one of these intelligence agencies, was working hand in hand with them on that. Mm-hmm. So did they learn that we're more afraid of Russians and that that would be more profitable, that we clicked on more ads when we heard negative stories about Russians? And maybe the war on terror with all these scary men with beards, maybe that's played out. Maybe we don't buy enough with that. Because remember, that was the very first thing that George W. Bush said when he stood on the rubble of the 9/11 towers. And he said, go shopping. Well, maybe we stopped shopping, and that's part of the problem. And now they need something for us to convince us to go out and shop, spend in a very American way to defeat the commies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, plus the rest of the world is looking from an economic perspective, much better. So the U.S. is, I think, lashing out, fighting a rear guard action. They see their empire collapsing, and so they're lashing out. And they're why even use Cold War? Because it's something that they kind of familiar. It's not really contemporary. I don't really see this going anywhere in a meaningful way. I mean, you'll see a lot of heartbreak and agony as the U.S. tries to, like the portrait of Dorian Gray. You know, the U.S. has had so many facelifts over the past 50 years. You know, it looks like one of these people you see, 70 years old, who've had 30 or 40 facelifts. It's not a pretty picture. And this is the U.S., you know, but the person who's had all those facelifts still thinks they look good. Mm-hmm. You know, that's part of how narcissism works. The U.S. still thinks it's looking good, even though it's had 50 facelifts. The dollar is the weak, you know, link in the global economy. The culture has become trash to the point of, it's just, nothing left of it. I mean, what is the American culture these days? The Transformers Part 47, it's like,
Yeah, well, they don't have an overall culture. They're interesting pockets all over the place, and some certainly interesting entrepreneurs, but the U.S. is doing everything to stop them. By the way, I see another giant corporation has fled America. This is AbbVie, the big pharmaceutical company. They merged. They did an inversion with an Irish company actually listed here. It's all like, it's a big tax loophole, and it's called Shire. And Shire, by the way, sells almost all of their pharmaceuticals into America. That's something like 90% of their income. And yet, so here this company, a pharmaceutical giant, which, by the way, I would say it's probably in the top three of the lobbyists is the pharmaceutical industry, in terms of not only forcing laws that created a overly burdened, expensive, healthcare system in America, where a lot of the cost of it is the pharmaceutical industry. They also force, they also have the whole entire State Department in their pocket, basically going around the world strong-arming people into trade deals, which force their IP rights, and it's mostly about U.S. pharmaceuticals. And yet, here they are fleeing America. They don't actually want to have to pay for all those services thus delivered. So they received the invoice somehow, and they said, forget that, and they're leaving. And the other company seeking to do this and is about to do this is Walgreens. They're going to move to their headquarters to Switzerland.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, so you have these big American companies that are committing acts of tax terrorism. And so why would you question a coup in Ukraine by the same greedy corporations who are then turning around and bombing people in eastern Ukraine. I mean, it's the same corporations. They're ruthlessly disenfranchising millions of people. They are undermining governments. They engage in mass murder. So I don't why wouldn't that be your first assumption in these instances, instead of believing the propaganda that somehow there's something else going on? I mean, just look at the facts on the ground. You've got a group of kleptocrats who roam the world and destroy economies for a few pennies, you know, saved on their taxes. And what do they do with this cash? It doesn't go to anything worthwhile. It just goes to hookers, cocaine, you know, this type of thing. It's not really going anywhere.
Now, all of these tie together, all these stories into this one final headline here in Ukraine. Private equity. We started the story with this groping private equity banker. Geopolitics and new Cold War. And the headline reads, Jeb Bush has created a private equity firm. This Florida-based investment firm is specializing in, wait for it, oil and gas industries. So just like Joe Biden's son, Hunter, is now working for the biggest natural gas company in the Ukraine. Well, here Jeb Bush is getting in on this oil and gas and all of these wars that are driving up the prices. But also, you know, this is integral to this new Cold War, of course, because the part of the reason why they hate Russia is that they have so much oil and natural gas.
Yeah, that's right. You know, Russia's not part of the Federal Reserve System. So or the U.S. Or European oil majors. So they are. So there's a war because the U.S. Ponzi scheme needs to be fed. You know, it is a Ponzi scheme. You need the base of the pyramid of the Ponzi scheme needs to be constantly made bigger. So the U.S. has to keep either bombing, through their proxy, innocent folks in Ukraine, or you know, Gaza. Apparently, there's an oil play there. So their client state, Israel, will commit genocide and, you know, make a mockery of everything that they say they're against, going back to the Holocaust. And it turns out that it's just an oil play, basically. Jeb Bush is an oil man. The Koch brothers are oil people. And unfortunately, burning all that oil has going to cause premature human extinction. So, but this show will continue. Even though the humans may become extinct, this show will still be broadcasting somewhere in outer space and being listened to by civilizations and parallel universes, probably for eternity.
Actually, yes, we should pre-record some episodes so that any creatures like monkeys or dolphins left behind who survive can, you know, listen to our radio. But that's it for this episode of The Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM with me, Stacey Herbert, and this guy is Max Kaiser.
Bye, y'all.